Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz, you have found the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And I'm your host, Doug Lear. I'm a former game warden, a current biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. So if you're new to the program, that's where I'm coming from, is a background as a North Dakota native, born in Williston. And when I have to start writing down towns that I lived in, it begins in Williston and it ends in West Fargo, where I'm planted as I speak, and lived here longer than any other place, almost twice as long as any place else that I've lived in North Dakota. So I don't know if you ever really feel like you're home in the town that you live versus the towns that you grew up in. But I am an outreach biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department out of West Fargo. And on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we give you a better understanding and a look at some of the topics and the issues going on across the prairies of North Dakota. And we also bring you a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stock. They'll give you a little better idea of what's going on outdoors, what the guys and gals are doing, from snow goose hunting to fishing and turkey preparation coming down the pipe as well. And then we bring you the same type of information from Minnesota with CJ Johnson. And we're going to be joined by Greg Power. He is the Fisheries Division Chief for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And I know people associate the work of fisheries with summer stocking and population surveys and netting, but there's some very important work that goes on in the dark of winter. And when we talk about winter kill and the phenomena that takes place below the ice, Greg Power, Fisheries Division Chief for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, this is an annual assessment.
Right. It's an annual thing. We've done this for almost ever, for as long as we've had fish management, 40 plus years. But in the dead of winter, the crews get out there, and they don't get to all the lakes, especially now with so many lakes that we have. But we get to the majority of them, especially the ones that are the more traditional good fishing lakes. And generally in late January to mid to late February, we'll get out and get water quality samples from most of these lakes.
Giving you a better understanding of what our fisheries biologists are doing this winter. And you talk about the checking that they're doing on the lakes. What exactly are they looking for?
Primarily dissolved oxygen. Just take with meters. There was a day that we didn't even have the electronics, obviously, and it was very time consuming to do these winter DO runs, we call them. But yeah, they check primarily dissolved oxygen, sometimes conductivity, you know, alkalinity, but that's a big parameter that we look at.
So then you're measuring the dissolved oxygen levels to determine how the lakes are doing.
Right, exactly. And, you know, as you drop the probe down in the water, we get readings all the way through the entire water column, and it's instant, right, like that. So it's you know, very informative. If you see dissolved oxygen, especially right in the middle of the water column, let's say at 2 parts per million, that's how they measure it. 2 parts per million or less, there's some real concern there. Get close to zero, there's a lot of concern. There's probably a fish kill that's already occurred. Most of our lakes, if it's above 5, you're good. And if a lot of our lakes, like this winter, we're seeing stuff 8, 9, 10 and above, which is as good as it can get.
Greg Power, Fisheries Division Chief, is our guest on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. When I was in junior college at Bottineau, Al Offworth had field classes, and one of those that I did was checking dissolved oxygen levels on some of the lakes and the ponds in the Turtle Mountains. And I'll tell you, if you're listening, folks, it's not as simple and easy as it sounds. Now, at that time, we didn't have the electronics to gather it for us, but we were hiking in the dead of winter, so it's not something that's done in the real pristine, ideal conditions. You always do these in the dead of winter, Greg?
It's a dead of winter. You know, the longest or the shortest daylight is in December. If the snows come early, and some winters they do, especially, you know, let's say Halloween in October, and they stay like it did 5 years ago, roughly 5 years ago, we had a bad, bad winter where we had a lot of snow. It came early, it stayed, never melted. So the snow just kept continuing to increase on the lakes. Forward into March and especially April, you start getting a little runoff and that snowpack starts to disappear a little bit. We're over the hump, but this is the time of the year that we need to get out and look.
Greg, let's go back and talk a little bit about the recipe for winter kill. Oftentimes people associate winter with strictly the cold weather, but that's not as much of a factor. What are the factors for winter kill?
Exactly. It has everything to do with light or sunlight transparency through the ice and into the water. The more sunlight that you have from up above that gets into the water, the better you are. The more photosynthesis, and that's what generates the oxygen in the water. If you get more, if it's darker and darker, more snowpack, less light penetration, less photosynthesis. The amount of ice, like this winter, we have statewide, it is way up there for the amount of ice pack we have throughout most of the state. It's maybe not record, but near record amount of ice. That in itself isn't a big deal, but sometimes if the ice is really cloudy, that can be a bit of an issue, but ice by itself isn't a big deal.
And Lord knows we've had lots and lots of ice this winter, but there is, once you've got the elements, once you have the snow on top of the ice blocking the sunlight, Greg Power, Fisheries Division Chief, will help us better understand the chemistry and the process of how this all unfolds deep underneath the ice. That was one of the things that I always thought was really kind of fascinating, is you look across the prairies of North Dakota in February and in March, and everything looks all hunky-dory. Guys are catching fish, and you don't realize that beneath the snow and the ice and the cold and the dark, there's more going on than meets the eye. It's almost like a mystery. I wrote a column on winter kill back a number of years ago when my column was being carried by ESPN Outdoors, and ESPN Outdoors went bye-bye, and so did my column, but it was called, they titled it, ESPN Outdoors titled it like The Silent Killer, and it draws people in. And the chemistry behind that with Greg Power, the Fisheries Division Chief for your North Dakota Game and Fish Department, coming up next on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Coming up in about 5-10 minutes, give or take, we're going to be bringing you a Central Dakota Outdoors Report is what we call it, with Pat Stockdill. And if you haven't heard Pat Stockdill, maybe you've read Pat Stockdill. She writes in Dakota Country Magazine and Minnesota Outdoor News and a lot of other places. She is a well-decorated, well-acknowledged outdoors communicator in North Dakota, and we're fortunate that she joins us each and every week. But before we do that, Greg Power is the Fisheries Division Chief for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. We talked about winter kill and some of the work that game and fish biologists are doing throughout the winter, assessing lakes with dissolved oxygen levels. But when we get snow on top of the ice and we get what winter kill is called, explain to us a little bit more in depth, Greg.
When oxygen, because of the lack of photosynthesis and also the decomposition under the ice, but those two things, when that's, you know, bad situation, again, we'll give you that DO of 2 parts per million. That's where you'll see the fish kill. The fish kill sometimes can occur way back in December. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can occur really early and you don't know about it. Sometimes it can happen, sometimes towards ice out. Each lake's a little bit different, but if we go out there this time of the year and we have oxygen levels of 5 parts or better, most years we're clear. We're going to be okay for that year.
I mentioned when I was in junior college in Botno checking dissolved oxygen levels, and I didn't have any electronics. So myself and Jeremy Rockowitz, Jeremy is now a conservation officer in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, we'd hike into Strawberry Lake with our auger and punch a hole, take a water sample, drop a couple tablets in there, and use like one of them litmus papers to get an idea of what the dissolved oxygen level was. Even more rudimentary than that, you can get reports of lakes in trouble, lakes experiencing winter kill, from ice anglers, can't you, Greg?
And then oftentimes that's how we learn about it too. We either haven't gotten to that lake, or maybe it's not on the list that year and the public reports it to us and we'll go check it. But one of two things will happen. Oftentimes, especially minnows, because they're the most abundant fish in a lake, when they drill a hole, a couple minutes later, or maybe a couple hours later, they'll start seeing fish coming up through the hole, gulping for air, and they're stressed, and we know there's a problem right there. Or sometimes when it's really bad, they'll get a real sniff of something that doesn't smell quite right here. There's the hydrogen sulfide or the ammonia. You'll get that smell, and you can tell then that things are in trouble.
Greg Power, Fisheries Division Chief, is our guest on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Let me ask you a little broad general scenario. Is if you go back to the way our North Dakota winters, this is again general. Some spots get snow. Some lake, it can be so lake specific. But in general, if you have a relatively open winter without a lot of snow, and then you get into the end of March or into April and you get a bunch of snow on top of it, can it tip lakes?
If you're on the bubble, they would be. If it's a lake that's kind of struggling, let's say in that 2 parts per million, 2-3 parts per million right now, and you get a whole lot of snow between now and let's say the next 6 weeks, that could be enough to put it over the edge and have a fish kill in that lake. If a lake's in good shape right now, again, above 5 parts, even if you get a foot of snow, we're probably be okay.
From your vantage point, all things considered, how are we sitting?
Looking back again to those 3 bad winters we had in a row, we had a lot of winter kill, especially that one winter about 5 or so years, 6 years ago. We had 40 some lakes that had winter kill. On average, we're in that, about 10 lakes somewhere in the state will have either partial or total winter kill. And I think that's probably where we're at this year. We know of a couple for sure so far that in all likelihood winter kill, but I don't think we're going to be any worse off than average. And given all the lakes out there, that's certainly good news because, and we've had a lot of winter. People are tired of winter. It's that time of the year, no matter what, you're getting, it's dragging on and you're thinking, man, it's going to be tough for fish. But again, like you alluded to, we haven't had, in fact, I think pretty much statewide, we're probably below normal for snow now. The east and parts of the northeast have a pretty good snowpack like they always do. But I think we're in pretty good shape.
When an angler hears that their favorite hot spot for summer fishing or winter fishing has experienced winter kill, there's definitely some disappointed anglers out there, but it's not terminal. There's work that our fisheries crews do to try to help, isn't there?
Exactly, and especially now, again, as most people that fish know this, but we're at record number of fishing lakes. So times like this, you can afford to lose 10, 15 lakes a lot easier than you could, let's say, 25 years ago.
Sure.
Man, that really put, you couldn't afford to lose any more lakes back then. And in recovering these lakes, the guys are very aggressive. Once we know about it, that's important for us. Either if people see dead fish come ice out, it's important to report that back to us because we still can get that into the rotation and get, depends upon the lake, but we'll get pike or perch or walleye or whatever it is in there. We'll get them stocked, and these small lakes that do winter kill also are very good for production, so they can turn it around real fast. A couple years, you'll have that fishery back.
So it's not as bad as it might. There's a lot of things in life like that. When you get past the shock of hearing that your favorite fishing spot has winter kill, there's not a terminal, never going to catch fish in there again mentality that goes behind it. But me as an angler, I can totally understand, because if you got 400 lakes in North Dakota compared to when you had 200, or if you have 450 compared to when you had 250 lakes, if your favorite spot is burnt because of winter kill, it is depressing. There's no other way to look at it than being disappointed and being a little bit depressed. So that's also on the backside of the message that as ice out comes through, keep your ears and I suppose your noses open a little bit as well, because we still have about the same number of fisheries biologists compared to when we had 200 lakes or 250 lakes. And when you look at the number of bodies of water that have fish in them, they're not going to be able to get to every single one. And it just helps them as fisheries managers, might give them a spot. Ooh, I hadn't thought about swinging in there and checking that one out. Speaking of checking things out, let's get a better idea of what is happening outdoors. Hunting, Fishing, a Central Dakota Outdoors Report with Pat Stockdale is up next on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. In just a moment, we will connect you with the latest from the outdoors from Pat Stockdale with the Central Dakota Outdoors Report. And then also we'll be connecting with CJ Johnson a little bit later on in the program. Do the same thing for Minnesota. Get you a little better idea of where people are going and what they are doing outdoors this weekend. The moose, elk, and bighorn sheep applications are out. They are due coming up next week in just a few days, March 26th. Wow, we're burning through March in a hurry. In fact, next Saturday is the last Saturday of March. It doesn't seem like we've really had the March type feel, but regardless of what we think, regardless of what we feel, the deadline for moose, elk, and bighorn sheep is coming up Wednesday, March 26th. When you open them up, here's what you're going to find. Bighorn sheep season will have 5 licenses available. That's one more than last year. One more than last year. Still have one in the auction. The actual season length has been extended a couple of months. Basically, what we've done is corresponded the new opening date with the peak of the rut to give hunters better prospects of finding mature ram bighorn sheep. Elk licenses, 261 available for this coming fall. That's right, the exact same that were available in 2013. There will be 261 elk tags available. Keep in mind, don't forget, and sometimes our short-term memory, we do not take into account some very significant recent changes in elk population in North Dakota. The South Unit of Teddy Roosevelt National Park. Remember the elk reduction effort that went on 2010, 11, 2012? There were 937 elk, 701 adult cows that were removed. Historically speaking, that population would spill over into the private land, into the lands surrounding Teddy Roosevelt National Park. You've got an elk hunt that took out 363 elk from licensed elk hunters in E3 and E4. So the park elk population is below 200. We're going to have the same number of E3 and E4 tags as we had last year. But that's a little combination of history, elk management, putting us where we're at today with 261 elk tags available. 111 moose licenses available for this coming season. That's the same as last year as well. You know, it's M1C and M4 still remain closed to the downward trend in moose populations in the northeastern, north central portions of North Dakota. You can apply online. I always encourage people to apply online. The fee increase spills over from fishing and hunting to application fees for moose, elk, and bighorn sheep. Used to be $3, now $5. And if you draw, it used to be $20 for the tag. It's $30 for the tag now if you draw as well. That is the nuts and bolts of these once-in-a-lifetime licenses for North Dakota. Residents only for elk and moose, and non-residents can apply. This is done through North Dakota legislature, through Century Code. They are eligible to apply for a bighorn sheep tag as well. Let's see. We got the nuts and bolts cleaned up on that. Let's welcome in to the program Pat Stockdale, a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. She is a very well-respected outdoors communicator. You read her work in many different outlets, Dakota Country Magazine, Minnesota Outdoor News, and she joins us each week. Pat, what's cooking outdoors this week?
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. Well, folks, it's that time of the year when the focus is on deteriorating ice conditions and slush along the shorelines across many lakes in North Dakota. Let's face it, we're finally transitioning from ice fishing to open water fishing. However, that being said, some anglers are still venturing onto Devil's Lake. Caution is a must, though, because there are numerous slush pockets. Shoreline ice will start to deteriorate, and we're not that far from open water areas. For those venturing out, though, try Pelican Lake in 5 to 15 feet for perch and walleye. Black Tiger Bay is producing perch in 25 to 45 feet. East Devil's Lake has perch activity in 45 to 50 feet. And Lake Irving is good for pike. Move around to locate those active perch schools, however. Few reports are coming in from the area's mid-sized reservoirs. Access and ice conditions vary across the southeast, with warm weather melting snow on top of the ice, pushing water up from the holes, and bringing some runoff on top of the ice on smaller reservoirs and lakes. Conditions can vary significantly from lake to lake and even from day to day. There are limited reports from Richland, Ransom, Sargent, and the Moore County lakes. Anglers are generally finding hit-and-miss success. However, there are some reports of good perch and walleye activity. The perch bite across Barnes County sloughs remains good. There, you'll want to try plain hooks with waxworms, perch eyes, or minnows. Many are smaller perch, but with some patience, anglers could find keepers mixed in. Pike remain steady on dead sticks or tip-ups with smelt, and then work the shallower water. The Missouri River, though, is opening up from its ice cover downstream of Garrison Dam. And while it's been slow much of the winter, look for anglers to give boat fishing a try at least. The tailrace is producing an occasional fish, a mix of walleye, pike, and catfish. Don't forget that those new 2014 boat registrations are required. The much-welcomed warm weather brought Canada geese into North Dakota, with light geese moving in as well. So far, most of the light geese remain south of Interstate 94, but that can change rapidly. Speaking of migration, the folks around Arrowood National Wildlife Refuge near Pingree reported seeing some of their first raptors of the season.
Ah, yes, appreciate, as always, a little better, a little clearer picture of what's going on outdoors across the prairies of North Dakota. Don't forget, you can get your outdoors fix daily at 6:20 a.m. in the morning with myself and the Big Kahuna with an Outdoors Live update, Monday through Friday at 6:20. We take your calls on Thursdays at 1:40 with Jack and Sandy. And then also this program is podcast at kfjo.com. And there's a blog at kfjo.com as well. All thank you to Bob Harris. Coming up next on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, a Minnesota Outdoors Report with CJ Johnson on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the last shot for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. CJ Johnson just around the corner as we update you on the Minnesota side, on the Minnesota side of things going on outdoors. Oh, I want to mention this because I know we have a lot of listeners that are members of local rod and gun clubs, wildlife clubs, whatever you might call it. And we have a program. It's a youth grant program. And it's called Encouraging Tomorrow's Hunters. And what your club, group, or organization, doesn't have to be a rod and gun club. It can be a Kiwanis or a Lions club. If you're looking at putting on a shooting skills event, if you're looking at introducing kids to the outdoors with a youth hunt, this program is for you. Because these grants, typically around $1,500. Maximum grant allowed is $3,000, and we've funded about 40 different clubs and organizational events over the last few years. But they can be used for promotional printing. Maybe you've got some event memorabilia, shirts, caps, vests, ammunition, targets, eye and ear protection. And it's been a very successful program working with youth pheasant hunts and waterfowl hunts, shooting events, archery, rifle shooting type stuff. Rather than try to explain even more detail, check out kfjo.com, click on the Outdoors Live blog, and you will find full details on that. The reason that I mention it is the deadline is on April 19th, so you got a little less than a month to fill out. It's not a huge undertaking to apply for the grant, but it's a great program that might fit into your club project. And now it's time to take a closer look at the outdoor recreation activity in Minnesota. And when we do that, we call in our good friend, CJ Johnson. He is a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. CJ is a Lisbon, North Dakota native and spent a career covering the outdoors of Minnesota. And he joins us each week. CJ, how's things looking outdoors in Minnesota this week, my friend?
Well, not too bad. It's still a touch white in places. We dodged a lot of big, heavy snow in the southern half of the state, but there was a central section that got up to 10 inches last week. And, they're gonna put out their Christmas stockings and see what that comes. But looking around the state, first up in the Leech Lake area over there at Anderson's Resort, they say the fishing this winter has been nothing but phenomenal on Leech Lake, and I can believe it. That's a good lake. As usual, the low light periods for catching fish are best. Travel conditions have somewhat improved now out on the main lake with reports of anglers fishing the Stony Point and Pine Point areas right now. Sand Point on Leech Lake has also been a hot area for pan fishing during the day. Again, pan fish, go smaller with your presentation. Smoky Hills Outdoors over in Park Rapids says the recent above air average air temperature in the Park Rapids area is helping melt the snow and reoxygenate the waterways. That's a big word, and it really means a lot when it comes to fishing under the ice. You can take advantage of some active spring pan fishing bite up there. You find a weed bed, 10 to 18 feet of water on the edge of a drop-off, and then just start drilling holes. The bluegills and crappies will be nearby if you find some weeds. Kudix Guide Service on Mille Lacs says that although the walleye season is officially over up there, perch and tulipy still biting on Mille Lacs. And they have several roads plowed now up there. They got rid of some of the slush and so forth. And there are many of the perch catches being reported as well on Mille Lacs Lake. And Knife, Platte, and Sullivan Lakes in the Mille Lacs area are also producing a lot of panfish right now. Leisure Outdoor Adventure is up in Brainerd. This anglers are seeking out the hot panfish and crappie bite right now, and some reports are starting to come in with really good action, 10 to 18 feet of water, especially on North Long and the upper Gull chain of lakes, as well as some of the smaller lakes in the area, such as Sylvan, Hubert, and Lake Edna, all of those in the Mille Lacs area up by Brainerd. Jamie Hansen over at the Otter Tail Lakes Country says getting onto the lake might be really good right now, but coming off, if you've gone out early in the morning, could be a bit of a challenge. It's the time of year, of course, when you start walking instead of driving out of the lakes, because you never know where you're going to find a pile of slush and or some weaker ice. So take it easy. She said all the lakes in the Otter Tail Lakes Country are really, really showing up with a lot of perch and bluegills at this time. Christofferson's Bait and Tackle up in the Alexandria area says crappies and sunfish are being found at about 25 feet down, suspended on Smith Lake especially. Lake Darling there and Lake Geneva, they're producing some crappies in 25 to 27 feet of water, as is Reno Lake, down about 30 feet on Reno. Becca Arndt's office reports out of Detroit Lakes you should look for sunfish and crappies on the outside weed edges of Little Detroit Lake. Deadshot Bay and Floyd Lake, they're all down about 10 to 12 feet in all those lakes right now. Crappies and tulipies are being found suspended in about 40 feet of water or more at Long Lake by Burgess, as well as on Loon Lake, Lake Sally, and Rose Lake. All of those, of course, in the Detroit Lakes area. And Doug, I've fished it a lot in the wintertime around Minnesota ice fishing, and I remember seeing some really interesting things. I was going to an ice fishing contest just a few years ago on Gull Lake.
Okay.
And, well, being a Scandinavian, I was particularly interested in a competition that developed. I saw a team of Swedes and a team of Norwegians.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They said, oh, no, we're going to catch some more fish than you. And then they went out in the separate ways. You know, they had a little ice fishing contest going on. Well, sir, well, once the contest really started, and I am proud to say it, it was pretty clear that the Norwegians were going to win it. They kept pulling in fish after fish after fish. Well, pretty soon, the Swedes got a little bit worried.
Uh-oh.
They sent over one of their team to spy on the Norwegians. See what they're doing differently.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, in order to catch a darn many fish. Well, a few minutes later, one of the Swedes comes running back to his team, and he's just screaming, "A hole! You got to put a hole in the ice." The fish is always good. It's a catch, and we got to work on.
Sometimes we miss those finer details, don't we, CJ?
Yeah, yeah. You know that's the old story about the lady punched three holes. Never been ice fishing in her life, and in the lake. And every time she punched a hole in, there was a big voice says, "You aren't going to catch no fish there." She'd move to another one. "You aren't going to catch no fish there." Finally, she looked up and said, are you God? And the voice said, "No, I'm the ice rink arena."
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. CJ Johnson each week brings us humor and a Minnesota Outdoors report. As always, CJ, thanks so much for your time, my friend.
My pleasure, Doug.
CJ Johnson with a Minnesota Outdoors report marks the last hole to drill, the last shot that we're going to fire for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Don't worry, we'll be back next weekend and before that Monday morning at 6:20 with an Outdoors Live update with myself and the Big Kahuna. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. He is the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Without Bob, this program would not exist, and he irons out a lot of the kinks and picks up a lot of the pieces that I scatter around the studio as well. Big thank you to Bob Harris as well. Until next time, I'm Doug Lear, reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.